composing yourself and grounding yourself with these conditions that are happening right now. The body sitting, just noting, this mental noting of it, sitting posture. The sense of the body as a, something that's sitting, the pressure of sitting, the feeling of the body sitting is this way. We don't usually think about it unless there's some kind of degree of discomfort, but just say the body sitting erect, yet relaxed, don't be too stiff or forceful. Your spine is in alignment, it's not falling over, you're not crunching up the body, you're holding it up, finding a balance, sense of balance and comfort. So your mind, in your mind, the posture itself is something that you're using as a reference. So we're not just sitting and going off into the wandering thoughts or doubts or worries of the mind, but using this opportunity to note, to mentally note and to bring awareness to your own body as a something that's sitting at this moment. And the breath, the bringing attention, mindfulness of the breath, sustaining or holding your attention for the length of an inhalation, the beginning to the end, and length of the exhalation. From the beginning of the exhalation to the end, just using these points of reference to note and to focus on, to bring attention to, sustain and hold your attention on the breathing, natural breathing of your body. The mantra Bhutto, the inhalation on put, exhalation on toe. It's also a reminder of the refuge in Buddha, the knowing. It's this bare attention, this attentive watching, listening. Just attentive to the breath, not trying to get anything from it or make a problem about it. Don't make it complicated or difficult, just like attentiveness. This is a bare, relaxed attentiveness, just watching in an easy, relaxed way, just the inhalation, exhalation, just for a few inhalations, exhalations. Don't make it into some challenge or something that you kind of feel compulsive or you're forcing, because the attitude is this relaxed attentiveness, a sense of being with this moment as is. The watcher, the listener, the witness. And you breathe in put toes, be the listening to yourself thinking this mantra, Bhutto, and then the breath itself, the actual physical feeling, sensation of breathing, you're aware of it, using that as an object of reflection, watching, witnessing. Contemplate at this moment, that's all you have to do, just one inhalation, one exhalation, awareness of it, just the ease of the simple, peaceful thing. You don't have to be anybody. You don't have to prove anything, you don't have to get anything, you don't have to pass an examination, worry about the future, regret the past, think about all the problems, the family problems, the work problems, the endless kind of complexities of life and family life or the societies and politics and economics and all that, just so complicated. But at this moment, there's this sense of you can let go of the whole lot right now and just being with this breath, breathing in, breathing out, very simple. You don't have to be anybody. With the exhalation, it's like a sense of total release, letting go of everything. Breathing in and then just note with the exhalation, use that noting the exhalation, just a sense of just total relinquishment. Letting go of the world, of everything, the sense of relaxing and just being freed from a burden, from having to carry things around or hold things in your mind or prove or defend or justify these kind of human conditions that make our lives quite tense and stressful. This developing this love of anapanasati, where the exhalation, the sense of breathing, of just being with the breath, very simple. Anyone can do it. Using the exhalation as a sense of just sliding down a hill, or just letting go of everything. And contemplate, think, reflect in that way helps to develop an attitude of being at ease and at peace and relaxed. When we try to make anapanasati into something we've got to get concentrated with, then it becomes another hassle for our lives. You have to, another thing you have to do, or another thing you're going to fail at. And sometimes we think, oh, I don't want to learn, I don't want to have to do something that I'm going to fail again. I have to prove myself. Because we've been through educational systems and professions and so forth, where we're always in this sense of having to take exams, prove our worth, defend ourselves, justify our existence. But with meditation, we're just letting all that go, all that stress and self-concern. There's nothing to do with this practice right now, because here you don't have to prove or be anybody. Listening is like listening to the sound of silence, of high-pitched background. See if you can hear that. That attitude of listening. Sometimes it's like the kind of electricity or kind of gentle, ongoing sound that one can detect when you pay attention, when you listen. And that is the attitude, say, for calming the mind, for tranquility, for letting go of things. An attitude that more of an attitude than, say, a technique. Being the witness, the listener, the knower, like the Bhutto, the one who knows, the conscious one that is aware of things as they are. Then in Vipassana meditation, we investigate. We take the Dharma teachings of the Buddha and apply them to our own, what we're experiencing, like the just noting the impermanence, the way everything is continuously changing. The breath, we note, is the example of the pattern, universal pattern of arising and ceasing. And that as an inhalation from the beginning to the end of the inhalation, that's the peak of the breath, isn't it? Is when you inhale is, and that is, and reached its end. That's the kind of peak. It's like from birth to maturity as a physical experience. From the time the body's born, it reaches its kind of maturity, its peak, and then it starts getting old. After we reach our peak, then the body starts aging, getting old. So then the exhalation is like the aging process, to the death or to the end of the exhalation. So just in these, just recognizing this is a pattern of all conditioned phenomena, taking what just that pattern, noting it, reflecting on it, of the anicca, the impermanence, the changingness of it, the beginning conditions the ending. When we talk about the Buddha on the Visakha Puja day, and the most important Buddhist festival day is the birth, enlightenment, death of the Lord Buddha. And those are the birth and death is something we've all been born and we're all going to die. And so that we're right between those points now, between birth and death, where enlightenment is possible. We've got this potential possibility for enlightenment between birth and death in this human life span. So something in the reflect upon in Buddhist in just the terms of Buddhism and remembering the Lord Buddha, Gautama Buddha, 2,500 years ago. It's also a reminder of the pattern of life, the experience of consciousness, born as a conscious being, and then the body reaches its peak, physical maturity. From birth, it grows, matures, develops, reaches its peak of maturity, then it starts its the process of degeneration, of aging, getting old, till it's time for it to die, the body dies. And that's the same pattern as the inhalation, exhalation. You can apply that to every condition. On the grand universal scale of expanding and contracting universal systems, to just the patterns of your feelings and things that you experience in daily life. In a relationship, like in a marriage, isn't it, where the rising is the romantic side. We like the arisings of things. We we like what is interesting is the arising of something. Romance, adventure, excitement is the arising side of life, like the inhalation or inspiration, youth. We like children and youth and romance and interesting things to do, excitements and adventures. And this is the experience of arising, just like an inhalation. And then the other side, the exhalation, because inhalation, exhalation is fairly neutral in its experience to a human mind, but they compare, reflect on it to say that like romantic romance is like the arising, it's exciting, but it reaches a peak, doesn't it? It's like an inhalation. You can't stay, you can't hold on or sustain or keep that kind of romantic excitement. It reaches its peak and then it's no longer that way. And that's when people, when they don't understand this, they tend to want to have another experience. You can't usually do it with the same person, you have to find somebody else. Or interesting things to do, isn't it? Something what you're interested in, you find it, something attracts or stimulates your interest, and then you take an interest, and it reaches a peak, and then you're no longer interested in it anymore. You can't sustain or hold. You can't make something permanently interesting. Has that span of arising, reaching its peak, and then it becomes boring. In Vipassana, we're noting this. We're not saying that life should be, if God had done it the right way, he would have made everything permanently interesting and romantic and adventurous and exciting. We'd just be inhaling without exhaling. We'd just be growing and growing and growing and growing, never getting old. The thing is, it would be absurd, isn't it, if life were just if we could kind of eternalize the arising side, the interesting side of our life's experience, conscious experience. But it's in the understanding of this pattern, like the exhalation. I've noticed when I exhale, it's harder to sustain. The mind easily wanders. It's easier to concentrate on an inhalation. I can sustain concentration on an inhalation much more easy than an exhalation. The mind tends to wander away on the exhalation, wanders off into thought and other things. Just like when things get boring or the romance is out of the relationship or you're no longer interested, how easily we no longer pay attention, do we, to it. We want to find something else that will be arising, something that we can easily absorb into, be interested or concentrated on easily. So with Vipassana meditation, this investigation, reflection on the way it is, learning to be patient and to accept this other side of human experience. Practicing with just your breath is one way, is one way of kind of taking something that's immediate and easy to use for a thorough examination of it as a basic pattern for the conditioned realm that affects us and influences us so much. Now, with the exhalation or the other side, the side that we don't like or we don't pay attention to or we find boring or frightening, the unwanted side of life, then is how do we relate to that as in terms of Dhamma? And by accepting it, no, if we refuse it, we say, I don't want exhalations. I don't want old age. I don't want boredom and disillusionment. I only want romance, adventure, excitement, interesting things to do. Then we have to live a life constantly kind of seeking something new, something exciting. We never mature, we never develop wisdom, never grow up. We're always looking for the next interesting distraction. The meditation retreats, they're so they're set up in a way that we can reflect on this pattern, get to know it, understand it, ponder it, contemplate it, because it applies to everything in your life, not just getting through a meditation retreat as a kind of isolated experience, but it's you're studying and examining, watching, reflecting upon a universal pattern that you can see as an object because your inhalation, exhalation, you can objectify. You can see it as something arising and ceasing that you can watch in the sense of the Buddha, the watcher, the witness, the knower. And in that sense of refuge in Buddha and Bhutto, it's non-judgmental, it's just a bare attentiveness. It's noticing, observing, listening. Not judging. When we say I like inhalations better than exhalations, that self-view comes. I don't like exhalations. I down with exhalations, up with inhalations. Or we can become. It's like I like youth and vigor, good health. And I don't want old age, sickness, and death. But as we develop this way of Dhamma, this way of knowing things as they are, then as we age, that also is something we're seeing objectively. We're like an exhalation, like the boredom we're feeling, or the negativity that we're experiencing, or the disillusionment or disappointments, or the diseases or the pain or the loss of the loved, things like this, all this are, we're seeing, we're observing it, we're accepting it, not judging it, just noticing and allowing this into conscious recognition and understanding it in terms of Dhamma. So we can reflect like that, we contemplate Dhamma and as all conditions are impermanent, sabbe sankhara anicca, all sankharas, all conditions are impermanent is a reminder kind of teaching that we reflect upon in what's happening to us, the feelings we have, the mood we're in, the desires, the fears that we experience. just the way things change in a day. Now it's the beginning of a day. It's the arising time, isn't it? Sun has risen. This is the beginning of a day. It's different. It feels different than, say, 12 noon or evening. A different mood, different experience, isn't it? And we're witnessing it, observing it. The self might, I like mornings better than evenings. Whatever, preferences we have, that is the kind of self-view of what I like and what I prefer. But in terms of Dhamma, it's the way it is. It's this continuous changing process of arising, ceasing, arising, ceasing. And then that which observes it. It's the observer, the knower. It's not anything you can observe arising and ceasing. You're just being that, being the knowing. It's like standing back and watching rather than just reacting, getting involved and loving, hating, getting excited, getting depressed, going up and down emotionally all the time with what happens to you. Like a human being suffer a lot when we're just caught in emotional reactions and somebody praises us and we get happy, get high. Somebody says, you're wonderful, and we get high. And somebody says, you're a hopeless case, and we get depressed. We win £1,000,000 on the lottery and we get high. Life is wonderful. And we lose it and we're angry and depressed. We have really good health and vigor and beautiful complexion and good appearance and very proud and happy about it. And then we get some leprosy or our hair falls out or our teeth fall out. We have to wear glasses and things like this and get depressed. We go up and down we're just emotional kind of victims of what happens in life. The morning, I love the morning, high as a kite, in the evening, the end of a day, another successes. We like to be successful. I'm a success. I'm a champion. Important person. And get high on that. And then we fail. We're humiliated. We're despised. And we're depressed. So in terms of conditions and experiences, we're just victims of it. It's hard to control it and make everything successful and healthy and happy and praise and all the best. Life, a lifetime, human lifetime, is an experience of all kinds of positive and negative things in which if we're not mindful of and understanding, then we're just reacting, frightened by the possibility of getting old. Getting old and then we're no longer attractive and we're no longer economically productive in the Western terms, are we? Old people they're kind of a waste of money. You can raise funds very easily for schools, for nurseries, for children, for the arising side of life, but for old people and that. They're no longer, babies are cute, aren't they? They're sweet. We look at babies and we come, they bring a baby in this room, we'd all gravitate to it. We'd all, oh, isn't it cute? Isn't it sweet? Prettiest baby in the whole world. Look at it. It wets its little nappies and we think, isn't that cute? We think whatever it does, it's cute, sweet. We bring an old man in here. He wets himself. We don't think it's very cute. We don't want to look. We close our eyes and we're trying to be maybe good about it, you know, understanding it. It's a different experience, isn't it? That's the way it is. It's nothing wrong with it. It's just that beginning phase, the beginning side, youth or children and all that is very attractive, and that's it's the way it's supposed to be. Old age isn't attractive, but it's the way it is. It's not cute or pretty or nice, but it is to be accepted as a part of our human experience. It's the advantages of age is wisdom and understanding. The beauty of an old person isn't physical, but in what they've learned. The quality that what they've learned from their life, isn't it? The wisdom that they've used in their lives, and what they've learned is the beauty of an old person. Well, a baby doesn't have that kind of beauty, isn't it? It's innocent, but it's not wise. It hasn't learned anything yet. It's just learning, and it. So old age is something to value and to even look forward to. If you meditate and investigate it in terms of Dhamma, you're perfecting your human conscious experience. It's sad to live in a society that despises old age because it is something that we should treasure. We should treasure and value our old people, not just think of them as no longer economically productive, and you just want to kind of dump them somewhere. I'm talking like this because I'm getting older. This is like what I've been doing this morning is contemplating, reflecting on this, on the inhalation, exhalation, the arising, the ceasing, the impermanence of the conditioned of the conditioned realm. That where the body is a condition, the sankhara, your feelings, your perceptions, your conceptions, thoughts, consciousness, all this is impermanent. We say Rupang anicang, vedana anicca, sanya anicca, sankara anicca, vinyanang anicang. The five khandhas, they're all anicca or impermanent. And then we say, when we investigate Dhamma through, and that's what vipassana is. Vipassana, the word itself, is a deep insight, looking into the nature of things. The word means to look into the nature of things, into looking deeply into it, not just a superficial glance, but a real reflective, profound observation, examination of the conditioned realm as impermanent. Now, impermanence is not a value judgment. We're not saying because it's impermanent it isn't valuable, or because things are valuable and not valuable according to the causes and conditions. There's no kind of absolute values, or something is absolute, some condition is absolutely good. But conditions are relative, aren't they? Right and wrong, good and bad are relative, they're not absolute. On the conditioned, on this conditioned plane that we experience so strongly through these bodies and the senses. So it's, say, this retreat, it's worth, say, do you have now the time, opportunity to contemplate this more and more, to observe it, to internalize, to see the what you're feeling, or like last night's talk about the perceptions you have about yourself, to begin to allow them into a conscious recognition, but in terms of Dhamma, in terms of that they're anicca and they're anatta, what you think you are, what you believe you are or perceive yourself to be, is not what you are, it's anatta. It's a conditioned attitude or an opinion, and it might be appropriate at a certain time and place, but as a something that is that we absolutize and say I am this way all the time, this is me permanently, only is a delusion and a source of anguish and despair. If the attitudes we have about ourselves are critical and negative. For example, people say, "I'm an angry." They'll say to me, "I am an angry person," and this means that they see themselves as somebody who is angry all the time. Kind of, I have, you know, this is my character. I'm an angry person. And then every time they get angry, somebody says, "You're an angry person," and they kind of confirms it. And they just keep every time, you know, they just build up into this tremendous sense of I'm an angry person. And if you hold yourself to be that way, believe it and never question it, then you tend to become that way all the time. One tends to just react and become like that. And then people say, "You're a very angry person," and then say, "Yes, I can't help. What do I do? How do I change? How can I get away from being an angry person?" Or to put it in the context of Dhamma, what's a way of looking at it? Rather than "I'm an angry person," we notice when there's anger and when there isn't. We're aware, we're not trying to convince ourselves we're not angry, or we're not trying to get rid of anger, trying to make ourselves into somebody who's not an angry person, but by observing, using that if anger is a problem, then it's something to learn from. See the anger you feel is not a personal problem that's ruining your life and a terrible curse that you've acquired, but seeing it as an opportunity to learn, put it in the context, in the perspective of Dhamma. So then when anger arises, you feel somebody does something, you feel angry, it's this way. Anger feels like this. Really feel the anger. Like, don't be frightened of it. Feel it. There's a physical feeling. It feels this way. And then as we accept that feeling, and we're not criticizing ourselves for feeling it, it's just this way. It ceases, it's anicca, it's impermanent, and non-anger is like this. And that way you're seeing, you're investigating it as Dhamma, as the way it is. It's no longer, I'm an angry person, which that, if you hold on to that view, then you think, you assume that you are kind of permanently somebody who's angry and shouldn't be. I should be somebody who isn't angry. I should be kind, loving, caring person that doesn't get angry. But I get angry and so I'm something wrong with me. And I'm this way, you know, something wrong with me permanently. Permanently wrong with me is the assumption you're making with the self-view. But in terms of Dhamma, then what is it? There's anger and then there's non-anger. Then you resolve it. You're resolving those things. You're not deluded by what you're feeling. You're using what you're feeling as seeing it as a path to enlightenment rather than as an obstacle, a personal failure. So this morning, this practice with the anicca, the impermanence. Take that word anicca, and observe it with your breath. Just so that you're taking one kind of neutral thing and observing it. It's neither breathing is neither particularly pleasant nor painful. It's just neutral, but it's a pattern that applies to all conditioned phenomena, arising, ceasing. And just by, like I used to the beginning of the inhalation, and then it reaches its peak, that's the end of it. It's the peak moment. And then the exhalation. And the exhalation is a kind of release, isn't it? You breathe in and then it's a time to relax. Just kind of let go. Apply that too. Lack of romance, excitement, adventure as just boredom, seeing it as a kind of freedom from having to be kind of wound up in and caught up in the exciting states, like old age, and saying it's so nice to be getting old. It just doesn't matter anymore. Like, at last, I don't have to, you know, I look at the young monks and the anagarikas and all that, and I think, what they have to learn still, what they have to go through. I'm quite happy I don't have to do that again. It's like, what a relief. Rather than, I'm getting old, don't have the vigor I used to have, these young people are coming in and I look like an old fool, and they're going to, you know, because then foolish old men are pathetic, aren't they? I mean, aging men that try to be young and compete with young men are foolish looking. It's not beautiful to see. But aging has its own quality, beautiful quality, that you open to and see when you're reflecting on it, when you're observing the way things are. Then it's not a failure, it's not a kind of a curse on your life, that it's not, we don't blame God for making a mess, or we don't envy the young either. We appreciate youth without envying it or resenting the aging process, or even the sickness. Because we learn a lot from illness and from pain. It's something that we can choose to learn from. If that is part of our experience of life, then we can also put that in the context, perspective of Dhamma.